This is OMS Voices, an Amos podcast. I'm Bill Klaproth, and with me is Dr. Ashley Manlove, who is here to discuss craniofacial surgery and the OMS. Dr. Manlove, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bill. I am very excited to be here today.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. So let's start with this. What are craniofacial anomalies?
So craniofacial anomalies include conditions that patients are born with. So it could include things like cleft lip and palate. Mm-hmm. It could include craniosynostosis. It could include, you know, a variety of other facial deformities that affect the patient's ability to function properly and appear, quote unquote, normal.
Right. You just mentioned craniosynostosis. Can you explain to us what that is briefly?
Sure. Craniosynostosis is premature fusion of the sutures of the skull. So the sutures are basically fibrous or incomplete bone fill of mm-hmm. the skull that allows the skull to grow as the baby grows from a baby into an infant to a child and so on.
So obviously that needs to be repaired or corrected.
Right.
Yeah. So then what is OMS's role in treating a craniofacial anomaly? Where do you come in?
As oral maxillofacial surgeons, we specialize in taking care of the face. So any type of facial anomaly is right in our wheelhouse. And many of us are pediatric craniofacial fellowship trained to take care of these children. And our role can be as a craniofacial surgeon on a multidisciplinary team or on a team that has multiple different providers. Our role could be perhaps on the team, but maybe not as the primary surgeon. Our role can be educating the community. There's so many different roles mm-hmm. that we can have.
Yeah, as part of the team taking care of these craniofacial anomalies. So when you mentioned cleft lip and cleft palate, when are cleft lip and cleft palate diagnosable and how common are they?
So cleft lip with or without palate, because it can present both ways, is the most common facial anomaly, one in 650 live births approximately mm-hmm. around the world. And it can be diagnosed pretty early, and it can be diagnosed by ultrasound. So many patients with cleft lip are diagnosed by ultrasound through their various mm-hmm. prenatal appointments. A cleft palate, if there is just a cleft palate, that is much more difficult to identify in utero. But right. a lot of times after the baby is born, you know, it's identified.
It's easy to see. It's visible.
It's visible if it's a bigger cleft palate. If it's a small cleft palate, though, I've had babies come to me after a couple weeks and nobody noticed because it's so small. Mm-hmm. Whereas cleft lip is very visible. It's right on the face. So
right.
small or what we call microform or incomplete cleft lips are mm-hmm. always diagnosed in utero, but it's very visible when the baby is born.
Yeah. So you said cleft lip and palate, some of the most common forms of craniofacial anomalies. What are some of the less common craniofacial anomalies?
So there are a lot of different. Some have, you know, associated with syndromes or other anomalies in the body, but the ones that pertain particularly to the face would include hemifacial or craniofacial microsomia, where part of the face doesn't grow at the same rate as the other side. Treacher-Collins is a genetic condition. There are syndromes associated with craniosynostosis, mm-hmm. like Apert syndrome and Crouzon syndrome. There are other syndromes that are associated with a small lower jaw and perhaps okay. an isolated cleft palate, like Pierre-Robin or Robin sequence
okay.
and Stickler syndrome, mm-hmm. and they can go on and on.
Right. So when are some of these rare anomalies diagnosed?
Some can be passed down from the parents. Mm-hmm. So if the parents have a syndrome and they're aware of it, then they have a higher likelihood or heightened awareness perhaps of that being passed to their child. But others a lot of times are identified at birth. Again, it's the face, so it can be very visible. And then some of the other ones aren't necessarily visible at birth, but as they grow over the next couple of weeks or even months, it becomes more apparent that there is a structural anomaly.
Right. So I would imagine for the parents, this is very difficult. What advice do you give to parents who rightfully may be fearful learning their child has an anomaly?
Right. It's always a difficult conversation to have with somebody, either when I meet with them prenatally and they have a confirmed diagnosis of cleft lip, right? The parents are in disbelief. They are so excited about the baby, and then they find out news that can be a little bit devastating, especially because most parents don't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Cleft lip isn't necessarily genetically inherited, so it's very unexpected. So I just try to provide them with all of the information that they can use as tools to understand the timeline and what to expect. And oftentimes I'll share pictures of mm-hmm. other families I've taken care of so that they know, one, they're not alone, and also that that's treatable and we'll take care of them, and I let them know we're there mm-hmm. every step of the way.
And I'm sure that's very comforting to them and helps put them at ease.
It does. There's so much information out there, both good and bad. There's so much at your fingertips. I think most have a sense of relief when they meet with the medical provider or even the team. I try to meet with them in person. Oftentimes I'll meet with them with a feeding therapist so that they know as soon as the baby's born, we'll be seeing them and they'll be taken care of.
Yeah. And again, I'm sure that's very comforting to them. And knowing that there is hope that, hey, this can be repaired, this can be fixed, and your right. child will most likely lead a normal, right. healthy life. You've mentioned craniosynostosis several times now. What are the different types of craniosynostosis?
So the skull is super fascinating. There's different sutures in the skull. There's a suture that runs down the forehead. That's called the metopic suture. So that would be one. And then there's a soft spot, which most people know. Mm-hmm. You know, your baby has a soft spot at birth. And that is where the metopic suture kind of goes up to. And then there's coronal sutures that come down the sides, squamosal sutures above the ears, and sagittal suture that goes from the soft spot in the front to the soft spot in the back. And then there's additional sutures in the back called the lambdoidal sutures. So, I mean, there's all sorts of growth areas for the brain okay. to grow. And any one of those can be fused, or multiple can be fused.
And those all fall under craniosynostosis?
They do. It's a very broad term.
Okay, got it. And then what are some complex craniofacial conditions? You don't have to name all of them, but what are some of the most common ones that you see?
Right. So Treacher-Collins can be very, very complex.
And what is that?
So Treacher-Collins does not involve premature fusion of the skull. It doesn't involve craniosynostosis, but Treacher-Collins syndrome is often genetically inherited, mm-hmm. and the eyes are often downslanting. They can be absent or underformed cheekbones.
Okay.
They have malformed or smaller ears.
Okay.
They can have some hearing difficulties. They can have some issues with the eyes. They can have cleft palate occasionally, and they can also have a really small lower jaw, but there's a big spectrum. So somebody with Treacher-Collins can be the more severe spectrum or mm-hmm. a very like mild form.
I could see where that would be complex.
It's very complex.
Yeah.
So both in taking care of the patient, taking care of the family, and just trying to make sure that their form and their function is yeah. kind of established as they get older.
So for things like craniosynostosis, what is the surgery or treatment like?
For craniosynostosis, there's two options depending on what center you're at and what your surgeon's preferred technique is. There is an endoscopic approach that is minimally invasive. It's often done much earlier, so it's done in younger infants,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes somewhere between that 4 to 6, maybe 8 months of age, where the suture that's fused is essentially removed.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. then the bone is released to allow the brain to grow. And then the baby wears a helmet to help mold the areas that are misshapen from that fused suture.
And the baby will generally then heal properly or grow properly?
They typically do. They grow properly, and that helmet helps get the head shape to be more or less normal.
Mm-hmm. And for cleft lip and palate, how about the treatment or surgical options for those?
Well, there's one other type of treatment for craniosynostosis. Okay. So that yeah. was the endoscopic approach. And then there's also an open approach where the skull is essentially reconstructed into a normal fashion mm-hmm. so that the brain has adequate space.
Okay, got it. And then for cleft lip and palate?
So treatment for cleft lip and palate can also be a little bit complex, and every child is so different. For cleft lip and palate, I always tell the parents there's three surgeries that your child is going to have. They're going to have a repair of the cleft lip around 3 to 5 months of age. They're going to have repair of the palate around a year of age. And they're going to have a bone graft procedure to restore continuity of the upper jaw.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the 6 to 10 years of age.
Okay.
And those three are pretty standard. As far as additional surgeries, cleft lip and palate patients do often require additional procedures. They often require ear tubes because they're more prone to ear infections. They may or may not need speech therapy, and with that, there's surgery that can be done to help with speech, depending on if that's needed. All the procedures that they have can limit the growth of the upper jaw, so some of these patients will need jaw surgery or jaw corrective surgery to try to get the skeleton and the teeth in a better alignment. And finally, these patients may benefit from a definitive rhinoplasty to correct any type of nasal asymmetry, nasal septum asymmetry, to improve breathing and function.
And it's interesting, the OMS is involved in all of this, really the expert in these repairs.
Many of us are trained to take care of these patients from birth until adulthood, as are other specialties. You know, with the face being kind of our main specialty, I do feel like we are working around the face all the time, and that is what we do. So we are definitely well-trained to care for this population.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, Dr. Manlove, I want to thank you so much for your time. Anything you want to add as we talk about craniofacial surgery?
If you have questions pertaining to your child that you feel like something might not be right, I would request to see an oromaxillofacial surgeon who's trained in pediatrics. If we can't provide the adequate treatment, then obviously we can find the right person for you.
Right. Well, it's a good message and a great way to wrap it up. Dr. Manlove, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You bet. And once again, that is Dr. Ashley Manlove. And for more information in the full podcast library, please visit myoms.org. And if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.